A salary is the drug they give you when they want you to forget about your dreams.
Welcome to the Corporate Dropout Podcast. I'm your host, Alessia Citro. If you're sick of the corporate hamster wheel and looking to feel inspired and empowered to live a high vibe life as your own boss, you're in the right place. Dare to drop out in 3, 2, 1. Before we start the show, I want to tell you about the business I'm launching. Do you have a business idea, but you don't know where to start? Or maybe you've started your own business, but you know there are boxes you need to check when it comes to taxes, finance, legal protection, marketing, and more. Same. That's why I founded Thea Collective. Named for the Greek goddess of light, Thea was created to light the path for entrepreneurs. We have the community, courses, and connections that will help every entrepreneur quantum leap and avoid costly mistakes. Learn from experts across professions and get the blueprint you need for your business. Text BIZ, that's B-I-Z, to 949-577-8709 or head to thea-collective.com to learn more. Hello, friends. Today, I am interviewing Susanna Summers. She is an entrepreneur and data analyst who founded Bachelor Data, which analyzes The Bachelor using fun and engaging data visualizations on the hit reality TV show. She founded Bachelor Data Academy in 2020, helping Excel users learn how to become proficient in the platform in a unique and fun way. And spoiler alert, Bachelor Data Academy is what enabled her to become a corporate dropout. So with that, Susanna, welcome and thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to finally join the corporate dropout crew.
Isn't it like the best thing ever?
It is. Like, I thought it'd be liberating when I finally got my life back to myself and got to decide my time, but it was almost overwhelming, like how liberating it was.
Yes. And then it's a matter of like, oh, wait, I don't have to be in my office all day anymore. Like I could go and get lunch or I could go and get a massage or I could go on a walk. And it takes a little bit of rewiring, huh?
It really did. Like it was totally life-changing in January. I actually like had to really rewire my brain to understand this new life because I went straight from, you know, K-12 schooling to college to work immediately. And I was also in college and doing my student teaching internship to working. And then once I started working a few years later, I started a startup and then I was working plus working, you know, it's just like My whole life was focused on work. And now I get to focus on creativity and things that make me happy and my family. Like I finally get to focus on my family.
Yeah. It's a novel feeling, but such a good one.
Yeah.
So before we get into your full corporate dropout story, I love starting with a guest's professional background because one of the purposes of this show is for people to listen in and be like, oh, I have a background like that. If she can do it, so can I. So I peeped your LinkedIn and I was somewhat surprised to find out that you had been a teacher for a while. So tell us about that career path from teaching to tech and then also how you got into Excel and Google Sheets.
Yeah. So I actually got into college through music education. So I was planning to be a music teacher. I was a percussionist and I got tendonitis about a year into it and just couldn't do it anymore. And through a few career changes at the University of Texas, I landed back in education and it was basically early childhood through sixth grade as my focus. So my first job was a third grade teacher at the school I grew up at. I actually taught alongside teachers that were there when I was a kid. And I was a teacher there for a few years before I moved to Boston and became basically like an ed tech coach specialist. And then that job morphed into a tech director role. So I just left my job, my third job as a tech director, that I was there for about 2.5 years. And I'm now full-time data analyst influencer, I guess.
When I looked on your LinkedIn, the headline was Excel influencer, and I kind of giggled because I've never heard those two words together. But I actually am like one of the rare people that really likes Excel, so I enjoyed it.
I had no idea how to use Excel, so that was really what catapulted me into this world. I mean, as a teacher, you're not really taught Excel or even taught the benefits of knowing how to use Excel. And like I did have a spreadsheet that I knew how to use to put in kids' grades so I could just calculate their averages. But I mean, I taught third grade and then my last year I taught fourth grade. So it wasn't really Excel heavy. It was more project-based learning. But yeah, I had no training in Excel. And then kind of fudged my resume when I was applying for my first tech director job after being promoted into that position at my previous job. And, you know, I put proficient in Excel, but like, all I could do was like equal sum and like drag some cells. And I was like, I know how to use Excel. And I did not. I knew nothing.
Okay, so that's kind of how Bachelor Data was born, right? Because you were like, okay, now I got to figure this out. So tell us how that all came to pass.
Yeah, so when I applied to that job and I ended up getting it, I quickly learned in a job that I actually needed to learn how to use Excel. I mean, people were sending me spreadsheets all day and I had no idea what I was doing. And my first major task was to analyze our state testing data, which is like the ugliest spreadsheet in the world. It's like hundreds of columns. None of the columns have actual names. It's all just acronyms. So you have to like look it up on this document that they don't even send you. So you have to find that to figure out what each column means and what the numbers are. It was just horrible. And it was, I mean, I got through it with a lot of help from people who actually knew how to use Excel, but I didn't really know what I was doing. So fast forward to December, I was a few months into this job and I was home for Christmas. My dad is a Power Excel user at work. He's an engineer. And I was like, you know what? Like, I always see people talking online about Instagram followers around this show, but I don't see people like actually tracking it. Why don't I start tracking the Instagram followers for Colton season? So this was December of 2018. I went and collected all their Instagram follower accounts. And then every night of the season, which was quite the commitment, I opened up every single Instagram profile, took their follower accounts, and then I reported about it on this website called Reddit. And I did that there for a few years. And then fast forward to once I started to get my life back in the fall of 2020, you know, working as a tech director when the world shut down, totally lost my life. And I was wanting to move it over to Instagram and I created it a few weeks before the world shut down. And I decided to start covering Clarentatious season more regularly. And it just blew up. It was, I mean, within a year I passed, or a year and a half, I passed 100,000 followers. And it was just crazy to see how fast the community was growing of people who think about the data, but don't necessarily want to calculate it themselves.
Or don't know how to, right? Which is also
exactly.
So were you a Bachelor fan before this? Is that sort of like the segue in? Or was it something like, I see people talking about this all the time and that seems like a good opportunity? Or maybe a mix?
Oh, no, I was a diehard Bachelor fan. I've been watching since like I was living in my dorm at the University of Texas as a freshman and I was bored one day. I think I was like sick and I couldn't go out that weekend and I was trying to find shows. And I found The Bachelor. It was Jake Pavelka's season, which was like most dramatic. Like
that was such a good one.
It shows the villain, and then they had this dramatic breakup later. And
Vienna, I still remember. I was like diehard on that season too.
And you know, we all choose our trash, right? Because so whenever I talk to people about this, if they don't watch Bachelor, they're like, "Oh, that's not really my show." And I'm like, "But you have trash that you choose to watch."
Yeah, they might be more on like the Real Housewives train or something, or like Love is Blind, I think is making a comeback again, right?
Or like Survivor or Big Brother. Like everybody has, like my brother watches Big Brother and that's what we watch together. And, but yeah, it's a fun way to just, you know, you're watching the show and you're watching all these women get out on the first night wearing dresses and you're like, oh, wow, a lot of the women are wearing red dresses, but there's no data out there on it. So that's what we kind of do around on our page.
So give us an example of the red dress exiting the limo on night one, what type of data you might pull around that. I know the answer, but for those of the listeners that haven't yet prowled the page.
Yeah. So we'll pull basically every season. We'll go back on The Bachelor where all the women get out of the limo and we just record what their dress color is. And then we basically make this rainbow graph for each season that shows the most common, it shows all the dress colors, but then you can really see each season what colors stick out. And it was actually a storyline on Nick Viall's season that a ton of women, and that was the season that had the most red dresses, showed up in red dresses. And I mean, clearly producer driven, because especially all the contestants have come out to say it, the producers choose which dress they use, that they bring. They're like, no, you should use this one. You should use this one. But you can see which dress colors stand out. And then that leads to so many more questions. So it's like, what's the most common dress color that the winner is wearing? Or what's the most common dress color that the villain's wearing? And It's really those questions that people ask that have helped me learn how to use the data. Because early on, I would just post their Instagram follower counts. And then I started to like see the comments on Reddit where people were like, oh, like, you know, they were pointing out how certain contestants who are people of color weren't getting the same number of Instagram followers as the white contestants. Mm-hmm. So that forced me to go into look at how to rank the amount of Instagram growth each episode to see who had the most Instagram growth. And then I looked at one-on-one dates to see, was it really a difference when they had more screen time? And it was true, but it was only because people had commented with that information, those questions, that I was like, okay, let's go investigate that.
Wow. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. So tell us a little bit too, as you're starting this out, like how did you grow it? And then how did the Academy come out of it? Is it because people were asking for it or you saw the need? How did that all come to pass?
Yeah, I was not the person who came up with the idea to even make it. I had gotten some DMs of people asking about behind the scenes, or I had posted a story or something of my spreadsheet while I was taking the data, and somebody DM'd me and they were like, oh my gosh, I'd love to see your spreadsheets. Like, I'd love to learn how you do that. And then I started posting more screenshots about it. And then it was just one day, so it was like Thursday, somebody DM'd me and they're like, I would love to have a course where you teach me Excel through The Bachelor. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And I like kind of thought about it for a few weeks and I was like, wait, that's a really good idea. And I've always wanted to go back to find who DM'd me that, but I've never been able to go back to find it. But then the idea grew from there. So I started, you know, outlining the course idea. And as an educator, I'm really used to making a course outline, you know, like a curriculum. So I started to outline that and, you know, slowly building it out. And then about 2 months later, the course launched. And it was pretty much that week that I knew that I'd be able to quit my job.
Wow. Okay. So I have so many questions around this. So the first is, did you build the course before you sold it? Or did you sell it and then build it? Meaning like film all of that?
I sold it once it was fully done. So I didn't pre-sell. I did have a group of about 10 people because I had people who filled out forms saying they were interested. I did have some beta testers that were a godsend. I went back to go and re-record a few modules once I recorded them because of their feedback. And like video editing is a whole, like it is a beast of a process. And then if you have any technical issues, you have to go back and re-record and it's a lot. And I got really efficient throughout the process, but no, I didn't pre-sell it. It was all just day of launch.
All right. So, but I like though, the fact that you had the beta testers, because I like the feedback I've gotten from other guests, as well as from my own business coach is like, do not make a full course and then sell it because maybe you made something no one wants. So would that be your advice too? Like make sure you have someone that's sort of helping you figure out whether or not this thing is good to go before you invest a ton of time.
Yeah. And I also, I mean, I surveyed my audience. I tried to figure out what percentage were using Google Sheets versus using Excel. And the first course I built was the one that the least number of people used because I didn't want to start with the bigger, you know, the one that would have more demand. And then I set up a Google form where I could basically just track or capture all of their email addresses. And when I saw how many people were interested in it, when I pitched the idea where I was like, hey guys, like, would you be interested in this? And my inbox got flooded with DMs, but then once I put the form up and actually captured like names and email addresses of people that would be interested that I could eventually use, you know, in my course kit. So I could just go out in, or not course kit, convert kit, to email everybody for my launch. That's when I was like, okay, I think this is a good idea. I'm going to invest some time in it. My boyfriend was out of town that summer for 2 weeks. So I was like, well, we're going to try to do as much work as we can over those 2 weeks. Spoiler alert, it did not take 2 weeks. It took much longer than that. but yeah, that was basically how I launched it. But my beta testers were just, I could not have done it without them. Because even when you're listening back and watching it, like you will miss all the problems. You'll miss the gaps. Like you will tune yourself out because I don't know, me personally, I just can't listen to myself. And I do not enjoy listening back to my voice.
Does that mean you're not going to listen back to this interview? That would be so sad.
It's so hard. And that's the hardest part too, with like reels and TikToks now is like, it's not just recording it, it's afterwards having to listen to yourself on loop for like 20 minutes while you're editing it. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, I know. I feel like it gets easier, or maybe it doesn't get easier, but you just get more used to it. But I definitely feel you on that. So I want to, and I know we're actually diving in more to the digital course piece in the business tip mini episode that drops tomorrow. But when it came to your beta testers, I'm curious, did you give them preferred pricing or what did that look like? Because I feel like this is something that course creators, including myself, kind of struggle with.
I gave it to them for free. And I had a lot of people that were interested in beta testing, but these 10 people that I chose were people that seemed like they would have the time commitment to go back and listen to hours upon hours, you know, and re-recordings and everything. And honestly, not all 10 beta testers actually followed through with the commitment. It was, you know, it was a chunk of them did, but, you know, some people fell off the radar because of things that happened in their lives, and I can't fault them for that, but I gave it to them for free because I asked a lot from them of, you know, listening back, finding problems, and, you know, sending me their feedback on, it was even small things. Like I'd say, hey guys. And it was, they were like, well, you need to realize like a lot of your audience are not men. So maybe use a more gender inclusive greeting. And I was like, well, that makes sense. I was from Texas and I stopped saying y'all when I moved to Boston. But we'll go back to y'all.
I know I like y'all and I'm not even from the South. But I too have been trying to say you guys much less, but that's hard. It's like deeply ingrained in our vocabulary, isn't it?
Yeah.
What would you say
to... It was really useful.
No, I love that feedback. Sorry. And so what would you say to, like, what were some of the biggest challenges and learning curves you had as you were getting this thing off the ground and then expanding it? Whether that was scale or anything that you can think of.
It was a lot of things. I mean, again, I feel like I just kind of winged this. I had some like digital marketing influencers that I followed, but I didn't take any courses on like how to launch a course, honestly, because I was way too busy with work, even though, you know, a lot of people hear educator and they think summer's off. I was a tech director. So I was a year-round employee working 40 hours a week. And a 40-hour week was a short week for me, especially with the projects that we had going on last year. So for me, it was just putting the course together because I went ambitious. I went for a pretty big course that's about 8 hours altogether. And then I guess the thing that I'm trying to tackle now is really how to sell is the next piece, because, you know, the people that came were people who were really excited about it, but now is, you know, how do I market this out so people understand what the product is?
Yes. And is there like a live launch component? Like there's so many ways to get a course off the ground, and I'm in the thick of that right now too. So, I have a lot of compassion because there's so many moving pieces, like between the social media and like, do you make a free group where people can go and get information? And then it's a lot. So I'm excited to dive more into that, on the business tip episode after this. So let me ask you too, like, why do you think the need for this course even exists? Like, I'm seeing so many people leaving their jobs because they hate them and they're realizing whatever they learned in school actually wasn't that marketable. Like, what would you say is sort of your thought in terms of proficiency around basic stuff, especially as an educator? Do you think the need for this course is because people aren't taught it in school? Is it that they were taught and they forgot? Or talk to us a little bit about why you even think that the market is like the way it is for digital courses.
Yeah, I think, well, first things first, digital courses just make learning accessible to people. It's not this drawn out process of having to apply to a college program and be accepted and jump through all these hoops. It's, hey, I found somebody that it resonates with me and I'm going to go buy their course and do it on my own time. I remember there was a mom who DM'd me who was watching my course breastfeeding after having her newborn because, you know, she didn't have the time to sit at her computer. Like it's accessible, right? You can watch it on your phone, you can watch it on your laptop, wherever you need to. And it's self-paced too. The majority of digital courses are, they don't have too much of a live component, and the ones that do, mine doesn't, but the ones that do typically have recordings afterwards. So it makes it accessible to people. But I think as far as Excel, what a lot of people are realizing is that it is a very useful tool, regardless if you have a hobby or if you have a job. It is a tool that can save you so much time and get things done, not only more efficiently, but correctly. You know, it's calculating things or even realizing like, When I used to do my taxes, it was this like drawn out process, and everybody complains like, oh, it's tax season, I'm going to be so busy. I mean, now my taxes are the easiest thing. I just export a few spreadsheets and I run some formulas and I send it to my accountant and I'm like, all done. Like, here are my numbers. Just run them.
Your accountant must love you.
Yeah. I mean, but it's because of the knowledge around Excel, and a lot of people just don't realize that it's a tool that can really help them save time. So I think the other piece about that is people realize that they need Excel, and they're thrown into a job where people are always throwing them spreadsheets and they're terrified every time they open their inbox. But I think it's also just the lack of learning tools out there. I do have a gripe whenever people are like, I didn't learn how to balance a checkbook in school. And it's like, you probably were, but it also wasn't relevant to you at the time to learn how to invest until maybe, you know, high school, but maybe you didn't choose to take those courses and stuff. But, you know, Excel, it isn't taught in schools for the most part. And the YouTube videos out there are pretty horrible.
They really are.
A gift that it's the majority of them are men, can speak in monotone with absolutely no inflection. Like, I've tried to do it, and it is it's the mental Olympics to be able to take inflection out of my voice. So it's pretty boring. And most of the data that's used in those videos, it's just stuff that people don't understand. So the joy of the Bachelor Data Academy is that people, it's just looking at Instagram follower counts and screen time, but that can relate to if you have students, if you have sales territories, if you are, you know, whatever your hobby is, if you work on Etsy, like, it relates to it because it's numbers and variables, and that can go anywhere.
So out of curiosity, what is your favorite feature of Excel?
Oh gosh, there's two. So the first one's pivot tables. One.
I was going to ask you about pivot tables. Yeah, I had a feeling. Okay.
Because that takes away the need to write formulas, which is typically why people are so scared of Excel, because they don't understand formulas and functions. But my other one would probably have to be VLOOKUP and XLOOKUP. And it's basically a formula that allows you to merge together information that's not together. So like, if I had a ton of students and their absent rates, and then I had another spreadsheet with students and then their test scores, like, I would have to copy and paste those over. What VLOOKUP and XLOOKUP does is you just do it in like 2 seconds. It merges them itself.
How long did it take you to learn how to do VLOOKUP and XLOOKUP? I never heard of XLOOKUP before this, and I had to spend a lot of time figuring out VLOOKUP. So I'm curious what that was like for you.
I learned VLOOKUP first, and it was actually my dad who taught me. Because I watched so many YouTube videos and I was like, I don't get this. And the problem was, it wasn't that I didn't understand VLOOKUP. It's that within VLOOKUP, you need to understand another concept called absolute referencing. And that was something that every single YouTube video failed to explain. And whenever I tried to apply that formula to a whole data set, it would break. And I was like, I don't understand why this isn't working. And, you know, luckily I had somebody I could go to. You know, my dad is really proficient in Excel, but the majority of people, and what I even saw when I tried to ask people for help in the workplace, is that you feel like you're a burden. And especially as a woman, where I was surrounded by men, it would make me feel inferior, you know, to have to ask for help. And, you know, it's tough. Like, you don't want to feel like a burden on your colleagues, but like, you need help. And like, I'm not going to go comment on forums online because like, I need to like show my data, and my data is all student testing data. So I can't post that. And, you know, it's tough, but I think what I try to do with the curriculum is build off of the concepts. So when you learn these really complex formulas like VLOOKUP or XLOOKUP, you've already had a lesson on absolute referencing, but then that concept has been included in so many lessons leading up to it that you feel confident when you get to these harder formulas.
I feel like I'm pretty good in Excel, but that I probably need to take your course because it would save me a lot of time. So let me ask you something. Like, even just the way that you're speaking now, how big of an advantage do you think your background as an educator has put you at to now teach a digital course?
It helped me with the outline in terms of building the knowledge. But part of the curriculum is following my own roadmap, like my own journey, not to sound like The Bachelor, of how I learned my concepts. Like, I learned how to format cells And then I learned conditional formatting, which is where you set up rules to format. Had I tried to learn conditional formatting before formatting, that wouldn't have made sense, right? So I tried to build it off also of my own knowledge and my journey of how I built up those skills.
Yeah, just the way that I can even hear you like explaining things and looking at it foundationally, I feel like that is likely a pretty big advantage for anyone that's taking your course, is that you actually did it in a thoughtful way that's laying the groundwork every step. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how valuable do you think Excel proficiency is if you are an entrepreneur running a business?
You need Excel. It's like a 40 on your 1 to 10 scale.
40 out of 10.
It is so, it doesn't matter if you're an Etsy entrepreneur or if you have a startup where you're doing one-on-one coaching. Like, even if you are so disconnected from tech, like, let's say you do like, phone calls or you do podcasts or something like that, where it's not even anything that requires technology, like people are listening on their phones or something. It's so needed. Like, it's Excel, people think is a numbers thing, but it's more, it's tracking information, which we all track information on our clients, on our products, on our sales, on our taxes. You will find use in Excel, and being good at it will save you time and not make you scared every month of doing your finances or, you know, for me, it's not a thing anymore. It's like, oh, I was curious on the Oscars, like, and I'm just like copying, pasting in like import HTML functions. And it's like, oh, I'm all set. Like, I have the data I wanted on movies from the Oscars.
That's so fascinating. Okay, so the day that we're recording this, it's the day after Oscar Sunday, and you actually have another account called Pop Culture Data. So this is in addition to Bachelor Data, and you were tracking how many followers Will Smith, Chris Rock, and Jada Pinkett Smith had gained since the slap heard around the world. So tell us a little bit about, like, you know, how do you even go about finding these data points? Do people ever come to you with things to look up? Like, just tell us how the whole pop culture piece started, because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. So I started the secondary account just because people were asking me random things that just didn't make sense about The Bachelor. And I was like, well, let me just go put on this page so it doesn't get lost in all the Bachelor content that I do weekly. And it's a mix. So my posts either come from literally me sitting on the couch after watching that happen on the Oscars and just refreshing the Instagram, being like, oh, wow, he's gaining a lot of followers, and just thinking of it myself, versus I also have just people who will DM me to be like, hey, are you tracking this? Like, this would be really interesting. Now, naturally, I was not tracking Will Smith's Instagram follower accounts for the last week or two. So I actually have a tool that I work with the company for. It's like built for marketing agencies that are trying to hire Instagram influencers, and they pull all that data. So I try not to use that for my Bachelor data, mainly because with my Bachelor data, I'm very, you know, specific about the Instagram data being taken at 8 p.m. Eastern every night whenever it's taken. But for these types of things, which are more like global events, or like Mariah Carey's Spotify, like, I'll just go to different places online to find that.
Okay, so I have to get your opinion on this. And I need to look when this airs. Everyone will have forgotten about the slap heard around the world probably by the time this drops. But out of curiosity, do you think that it was staged or do you think it was legit?
I mean, I thought it was staged the first few seconds. I watched the unedited version first, like from Australia, I think.
Yeah, I was watching some Japanese version where they didn't cut the audio.
But then when it got to the point that they did cut, I was like, oh, this does not feel staged. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, this is a ratings ploy, but like, this is going to destroy Will Smith's career. I know a lot of it's like mixed where, and I'm trying not to have an opinion on it because, you know, I think that conversation is very much reserved for the Black community, and that I have my perspective as a white woman, and I don't know if it necessarily fits into the conversation, but I do think that this is going to impact people's careers possibly in a negative way. Just because of that, you know, I don't think that it was staged, but also there have been things that have been staged in the past at the Oscars that they own up to pretty quickly. And this has not been one of them.
Mm. Oh yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. I'm curious. I'm like, he won Best Actor right after that. Like, no one seemed like affected by the fact that he got up and hit him, and they were all cheering for him when he won. I don't know. It was very odd. So I'm reserving judgment. I'm just kind of observing. But yeah, it's interesting. But they've gained a lot of followers, just so y'all know. So it benefited.
Oh, yeah. Will Smith, I think he just passed 1 million new followers, which he had 57 million to begin with. But like 1 million new followers in less than 24 hours is wild. Yeah. But I do think... what's more interesting about what the Oscars is doing is that they're actually starting to bring in influencers. So one of my favorite influencers from TikTok is Straw Hat Goofy, who reviews movies and especially Marvel content. He actually went to go do an appearance on Good Morning America. Like, they're starting to bring in influencers to be a part of these events. And I think that is something that they're actually doing for ratings. Like, you can actually see that that's targeted to get people to try to watch this.
Yeah, which makes sense. Because I feel like everyone used to talk about the Oscars, and I forgot that they were even on until I saw someone post about it. How long do you think we can have to wait before you end up being like on The Bachelor on ABC giving commentary on data? Have you pitched them yet?
No, I don't talk to them.
Susanna, you got to do that. I would love to hear you chime in with the facts and the numbers.
You know, I try to only analyze stuff that's publicly available, because also I don't want to get in trouble with legal. There have been Bachelor people in the, like, people who cover the Bachelor world who have been sued by ABC, and I don't want to get in their bad, on their bad side. But I also think it's important to stay unbiased when it comes to covering the data. So a lot of people are like, they need to hire units. Like, that would be the worst thing for the data. It's like when pharmaceutical companies review their own drugs. It's like, you can't trust that. Like, you need to have non-biased data that isn't being paid for by the source that's trying to promote something. So, and I don't think that they could really give me anything that would be worth, I mean, maybe if I could get access to like casting data, but I don't know if that's necessarily data that they want publicly out there.
I don't know, but I think you need like an agent or something like that to help you. Cause I definitely see this for you, you being a commentator or something like that. Cause it's interesting. Okay. So some fun rapid fire questions to close this up. So first thing I got to ask, who is your favorite Bachelor of all time?
Oh gosh. Just Bachelor, or does that include Bachelorette?
Just Bachelor.
Oh man.
You can narrow it down to like two if you can't pick one.
I think Ben Higgins, but it's less about the lead for me and it's more about the cast. And that was the cast that I really started to start following on Instagram to like want to follow them after their season. So I think that's why I really identify with him being my favorite lead. It was more about the cast. I mean, he was a great lead too. And we got the drama at the end where he told two women that he loved them, and it was the first time it had ever happened.
So sad.
But yeah, I think we've had a lot of really great leads. I'm really interested too right now. You know, I learned a lot in the last year, especially 2020 and 2021, through covering the first Black Bachelor, you know, and especially challenging my own beliefs that, you know, my own, you know, environment growing up, you know, I'm learning a lot. And I got to read an excerpt from Matt James's book and thinking about, you know, how I covered his season, but also now reading his perspective on what was happening for him behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I think I identify him as a lead that I really enjoyed because it's challenging my own beliefs now and how I covered it. And I think it's more like remembering there are people behind these numbers. Like, you have to remember that there are humans there. And I'm really excited to read his book.
How about favorite Bachelorette?
JoJo.
Me too. She was the best.
But also, not for the same reason that I liked Ben's season. I actually really didn't like her cast at all, but I think she was a really fun lead to watch. She was one that I really enjoyed. And then also Claire and Tayshia's season were just a blast. It was the first real shakeup to the franchise. And I'm really excited now with the Bachelor franchise having two leads. Like, as fun as it is to be able to have this data that I can cover where it's like, let's look at the last 15 seasons and how literally nothing has changed. It's like, no, we want to see change. Like, we want to keep this show relevant and, you know, change it up a bit. So I'm excited.
You know, speaking of JoJo, I obviously, you know, worked out for her picking Jordan, they're still together, I think, right? I haven't been paying attention lately, but I was
she's
really
at her bachelorette party right now.
No kidding. Oh, well, shout out to you, JoJo. Hope it's a blast. All right. Who's your favorite couple from the franchise?
Oh, gosh. I don't follow enough of these people to have one. I think...
You don't have to have an answer.
You know, it's tough. I loved JoJo's season, but then her Instagram account really frustrated me because she would just basically like disappear from the face of the earth and come back and be like, hey, look, it's my dogs. And by the way, here are some ads. And I was like, ah, like I want to see your life. Like I care. Like I really liked your season. Let me think. Who's even still together?
Hannah G and Dylan. I like
they're an interesting one to follow.
Yeah.
So I started following her because I just wanted to know what her highlighter was that she used on her season. And I don't know. It's really interesting. I mean, she's making a ton of money, but it's also interesting to see, like, she launched an app for like photo editing and seeing like how she's maintaining her brand and trying to grow it in a time that it's really hard to grow on Instagram. So, and she's also one of the first Bachelor people who made the jump over to TikTok. And there was a lot of criticism on the forums about how content was cringy and everything, but it's like, she's doing pretty well over there.
I mean, isn't all content kind of cringy? Like, I mean, us doing dances and lip syncing, it's all kind of cringy if we're being honest, you know?
I feel cringy. Like now having to make videos, I'm like, this feels so weird making this content in this way. Like it feels cringy and... But I just have to go out there and it's like, just got to ship it, you know?
Right? Yeah. It's like, don't get perfect post paralysis, as Brock Johnson calls it. Okay.
Yes, my best performing posts have been the ones that I make on a whim. Like the day that I grew my account 14,000 followers in one day was literally, I was in bed. Like, and it was when Loki was on the Marvel series. So like, I was all over that and I pulled the music from it and I made it on a whim. And it performed best. And I was like, this is going to be so cringy, but it like blew up.
Yeah, it's always the ones that you don't think will or that took you 2 seconds to make. Wait, like without fail.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Okay, final Bachelor question. If you could only watch one, would it be Bachelor, Bachelorette, or Bachelor in Paradise?
Oh, hot take. I actually like Bachelor more than Bachelor in Paradise. So for me, if I had to rank them, Bachelor is my favorite because we get to see the women. And then Bachelor in Paradise is my favorite because we get to see so many relationships form. And then my least favorite is Bachelorette. And it's not because of the leads. It's because I just watch all the men and I'm like, eh.
Yeah, like, I'm with you on that.
Most of the cast just turn into being men who try to be like, hey, watch me work out. And it's like... That didn't work for you before the show. It's not going to work for you now either.
I love it. Okay, so you were kind enough to extend a promo code to our listeners for anyone that wants to enroll in the Bachelor Data Academy. So tell us a little bit more about that, how they can save $100 off, and any plugs you want to make. Plug away.
Yes, I am so excited. It is going to be a $100 off code for the course. And the code is Corporate Dropout. And it works on either the Excel edition, the Google Sheets edition, or the bundle. So if you're a person who has to use both for your job, which I'm sorry if you do, but it's really hard to use both. Our course, you can do a bundle and it shows you specifically in each tool how those work. And within each course, it talks about the differences between the two platforms.
Oh, okay. That would be valuable. Let me ask you just real quick. What's your favorite? Do you like Google Sheets or Excel better?
I like Excel better. I mean
it's the OG, so Google, right? Sheets.
Well, actually, so my OG was Google Sheets because I was in education and the majority of school districts use Google Sheets. But the problem was, is as I was learning how to use things in Google Sheets, I quickly discovered that it works much better in Excel. So Excel has to be my favorite just because it has more tools and it's just, they go a little bit further with how sophisticated the tools are. But Google Sheets also has the added in bonus that, you know, it's easy to share things. And, but I mean, Excel's come a long way there too. So, but yeah, there's pros and cons on both.
Okay. Well, now I'm interested in doing the bundle so I can get the differences. Well, this was awesome. Okay. So share with us, where can people find you? Where can they connect with you? Where can they sign up for the Academy and all the things?
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok under Bachelor Data. And you can either go to my link in my bio to find the course, or it's just bachelordata.thinkific.com.
Thank you so much for this. I'm excited for the business tip that'll drop after this. So if you are a digital course creator or want to be sure to come back for that. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. This episode was brought to you by Thea Collective, the learning community I founded for entrepreneurs. Text Biz, that's B-I-Z, to 949-577-8709 or head to thea-collective.com. That's T-H-E-I-A-collective.com to learn more. Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed today's episode, please help me get the word out about the Corporate Dropout by screenshotting and sharing this on social. I would appreciate it so much if you would subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and review as well. And I do this show for you, and I want to hear from you. So tell me, what is it that you want more of? Text me at 949-541-0951 or slide into the DMs at Corporate Dropout Official or Alicia Citro with 2 underscores. Until next time.